The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Journey Through History meeting April 3rd. ACP Convention offers Blues Museum tour and concert. The excerpt of an article by Susan Grigsby for the Daily Cause posted March 4th on House Resolution 620's passage, and a letter to the editor from Dr. Catherine Schneider, Ph.D., to the Wisconsin Leader Telegram on the issue. The World Blind Union weighs in on International Women's Day last week, and Lainey Feingold, lawyer, will be speaking at CSUN, and her presentation is excerpted, and a list of her other presentations coming up is scheduled, and I will be reading that. And if I have time left, I'd like to read from TechCrunch.com on Microsoft's Soundscape for iOS by Frederick Lardenoy. Today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. First up, A Journey Through History meets April 3rd, 2018 to review World's Fair by E.L. Doctorow. In April, co-host and resident bibliophile David Faucheux will lead us out of the world of truth, that is, history based on documentation, citations, and footnotes, for the field of historical fiction, based largely on flights of imagination limited only by what is plausible. NLS Annotation, World's Fair, DB22972. Doctorow, E.L. Reading time, 9 hours, 27 minutes, read by Merwin Smith. Historical fiction. Nostalgic recreation of the first decade in a sensitive boy's life evokes New York during the 1930s, captures the universals of childhood experience, the sights and sounds of growing up during the Great Depression, and reports on the intimacies of Jewish family life, some strong language and some descriptions of sex. https://nlsbard.loc.gov/nlsbardprod/download/book/srch/db22972. Download World's Fair. In the author, no other audiobooks. Today, the date will be Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018, time 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, and elsewhere in the world, Wednesday, 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. About 15 minutes before start time, go to www.accessibleworld.org and click on the History Room. Enter your first and last names on the sign-in screen. If you are a first-time user of the Talking Communities online conferencing software, there is a small safe software program that you need to download and then run. A link to the software is available on every entry screen to the Accessible World Rooms. After you have downloaded the simple software, enter the room, hold down the control key to talk, and let up to listen. All of our programs are recorded and archived. You may wish to subscribe to our Accessible World Announce list. Write to aw-announcements-subscribe at groups.io. Accessible World contacts, Robert Acosta, Chair, Accessible World, 818-998-0044. Email boacosta@pacbell.net. Web, www.helpinghandsnumber4theblind.org. Steve Hoffman, President, Talking Communities. Email steve@talkingcommunities.com. Signed, Don Queen. From Janet Dickelman for ACB. Visit the Blues Museum in St. Louis during the American Council of the Blind Conference and Convention. This is a must for anyone who enjoys music or history. The Blues Museum has music and memorabilia from the 1920s to the present, and docents who love to talk about all the museum has to offer. After touring the museum, enjoy a St. Louis-style barbecue meal while attending a blues concert. Mark your calendar for Sunday, July 1st. You'll be blue if you miss this tour. Don't miss out on the fun. Make your hotel reservations today. Room rates at Union Station Hotel are $89. This rate applies for up to two people in a king room and up to four guests in a room with two queen beds. Room tax is currently 18.435%. Make telephone reservations by calling 314-231-1234. Be sure to mention you are with American Council of the Blind to obtain the conference and convention room rate. Please contact me with any questions either via phone 651-428-5059. Or email janet.dickelman@gmail.com. Making America Great Again by Rolling Back Protections for Americans with Disabilities, www.dailycause.com. A few weeks ago, a moment of inattention led to a slip on a stair which resulted in a bad fall. I'm going to delete most of the preamble to this article and get to the meat of the matter about the passage of House Resolution 620. David M. Perry, writing for the Pacific Standards, explains the two main education and reform pillars of the law. H.R. 620 works on two fronts. First, it demands that the federal government offer businesses more education about the ADA while not providing additional funding to implement that education. In fact, the DOJ already provides such education. As we've covered at Pacific Standard, the Department of Justice has been rolling back guidance documents that clarify how the ADA works. So the best guess about H.R. 620's education statute is that it's a way to cut enforcement activity by making the DOJ spend more money on education. The second front, notification, is more pernicious. Right now, businesses that are found to be noncompliant can be held immediately accountable. That seems fair, given that the ADA has been law for 28 years. Under the new bill, a person who encounters an accessibility obstacle would need to have a written technical notification to the business, which often will require a lawyer to do correctly. Wait 60 days for that notification to be acknowledged, and then wait 120 more days for substantial progress to be made in resolving the accessibility issue. If after 180 days there hasn't been substantial progress, it's not clear quite how that standard would be regulated. The disabled person who first encountered the accessibility obstacle can then sue. They still won't be able to collect damages. As he explains elsewhere in the article, the Department of Justice only has a small division to actually oversee the implementation of the ADA. The law relies on private citizens to file complaints of noncompliance via lawsuits. Those lawsuits do not allow any financial damages, only court costs and legal fees. The International Council of Shopping Centers has been pushing this revision, claiming that certain unscrupulous lawyers have filed multiple lawsuits that are a threat to their commerce, i.e. profit, and that this type of behavior must be stopped at all costs. Well, at all costs to someone else. In this case, they will allow the disabled community to bear the cost of the bad behavior of the lawyers instead of demanding that the state bar associations or the courts rein in the lawyers. A favorite bogeyman case seems to be one that took place in California 10 years ago, wherein a plaintiff was ordered by the court to stop filing lawsuits against businesses. Part of the problem, Peter says, is that California has higher standards than the federal ADA mandates, leading some business owners to mistakenly believe they are in compliance when they are not. The federal standard requires businesses to do what is readily achievable, that which can be carried out without much difficulty or expense, determined by practicality and the financial resources of the individual business. In California, the standard is any discrimination or distinction in the way a business provides goods or services to the able-bodied and disabled. If you fully comply with the ADA and only with the ADA in California, you can still be sued, says Peters. Only 2% of buildings are compliant in California since the ADA guidelines went into effect. We still hear about this case as an example of the problems with the ADA, even though it is not a problem with the ADA, but with the California Bar and the courts. As for the real victims, who are the disabled, not the retailers, Andrew Imperato, president and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities, says his organization's biggest concern is that when the lawsuits are filed, a settlement may be reached, but the access issue is not addressed. We'd like to see the federal judges in a jurisdiction where lots of cases are being filed, looking at the phenomenon and trying to work on a solution that results in improvements in accessibility, says Imparato, and not lining the pockets of plaintiffs or boutique law firms that make a business out of it. Everyone wants the issue resolved, but restricting the ability of a citizen to file a complaining lawsuit against a business that is in violation of a 28-year-old law does not seem to be the only or even a remotely fair way to correct a bad situation. As the bill progresses to the Senate, we now have an opportunity to make our voices heard, and it is important that we do so, not because I had to use a walker for a couple of weeks, or because your son's best friend is in a wheelchair, but because we cannot ever let our country return to a past wherein so many of its citizens were restricted to a life viewed through a window. We are better than this. This may all sound somewhat alarmist, but in 1973, a woman could get a safe legal abortion just about anywhere in the United States. Recently, Vice President Mike Pence suggested that legal abortion will end in our time. Judging by how many steps backward we have taken across this country and how many doctors have been killed, I tend to believe him. By Susan Grigsby. Following is an opinion column written by Dr. Catherine Schneider, Ph.D. It seems to me ADA key for many. www.leadertelegram.com. When President George H.W. Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law, he showed leadership in protecting the rights of the one out of five Americans who has a disability to pursue full participation in public life. As a blind person and senior citizen, I've lived before the ADA and with it, and can personally testify that the ADA has helped me. I want to educate you about why a Senate bill like the ADA Education and Reform Act that passed the House is a bad idea and ask you to oppose it. The ADA has made my doing normal things easier. Five examples. Braille elevator buttons makes getting to my room on the 29th floor of a hotel a lot easier than the guess and hope approach before ADA. Many partially accessible websites so my screen reader can read aloud, news, weather, etc. More books recorded on tape and CD. I got the newest Harry Potter on tape the same week a friend got it in print. Banking and reading newspapers available by phone. It's wonderful to know if the check will bounce. Occasional Braille menus. Knowing everything that is offered at a restaurant tastes great. H.R. 620 took away the civil rights of people with disabilities. It makes people with disabilities wait for up to 180 days for services that other people have immediate access to. The wait may even be more than 180 days because a business making substantial progress toward fixing a problem can take even longer. H.R. 620 eliminates the need for businesses to be accessible until a complaint is received. There will be no need to make a business accessible until someone complains. That will mean many groups building new buildings, renovating buildings, and opening new businesses will not make their services accessible. H.R. 620 shifts the burden of accessibility from those who offer services to the person with a disability. No other group needs to prove their right to access publicly offered services. We should not be gutting the rights of people with disabilities. If there is a problem, we should be limiting the actions of a small number of lawyers who are bad actors. The drive-by lawsuits have not occurred in Wisconsin, by the way. H.R. 620 takes away the civil rights of people with disabilities. Would we ever think about eliminating the rights of any other group of Americans? This is disgraceful. In sum, please contact your senators to oppose any version of H.R. 620. Let state bar associations discipline unethical lawyers engaging in drive-by lawsuits. The one out of five Wisconsinites with a disability needs the ADA, as is, to continue pursuing our American dreams. Schneider is a UW Eau Claire Senior Psychologist Emerita. WBU Statement for International Women's Day 2018. The World Blind Union has voiced concern over slow progress toward full inclusion of women with visual disabilities in global development agendas. In a world where an estimated two-thirds of blind people are women, the WBU is commemorating this year's International Women's Day on March 8th with a strong call to action urging governments to implement effective mechanisms that guarantee full participation and leadership roles to women with visual disabilities. This year's UN International Women's Day theme is Time Is Now, Rural and Urban Activists Transforming Women's Lives. I firmly believe that to build a fully inclusive, sustainable, and resilient society, it is essential to address the unique needs of women and girls with disabilities and undertake measures to ensure their full and equal participation, said Dr. Penny Harton, the Chief Executive Officer of the World Blind Union. While addressing the UN at the opening ceremonies of International Day of Persons with Disabilities held in New York recently, Dr. Harton observed that many women and girls with disabilities face barriers such as lack of access to education, health care, and productive employment. They are also more subject to violence and abuse, and those who face disaster or humanitarian emergencies are particularly vulnerable due to lack of accessible infrastructure, information, and insufficient planning to understand and meet their needs. It is critical that women with disabilities be engaged in the planning and delivery of all programs and services. For that to happen in a meaningful way, they must be encouraged and facilitated to assume leadership roles, said Dr. Harton. Recently, the World Blind Union's Women's Committee launched a survey on empowerment of blind and sighted women to establish a better understanding of barriers to women assuming leadership roles. An action plan to deal with barriers and discrimination preventing women from becoming leaders will be developed following the survey results. The WBU Women's Committee is pushing for the empowerment, equality, and transformation of women and children, especially in developing countries where there is a great deal of work to be done, adds Ms. Kathy Donaldson, chair of the Women's Committee. One of the reasons why there is slow progress in those countries is lack of funds to train women, said Ms. Donaldson from South Africa. However, she acknowledged notable progress in countries such as India and South Africa toward empowerment of women. The World Blind Union is pushing forward collective action among its members to ensure equality and transformation of women's lives at all levels of societies. The World Blind Union's second vice president, Ms. Dantia Kanimba from Rwanda, reflects on the significance of the International Women's Day theme. One, what is the relevance of the International Women's Day theme to the WBU work and specifically for blind and partially sighted women and girls? Since the 1970s, starting with CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, several other legislations and conventions have been passed aiming at improvement of conditions for women. In many countries, affirmative actions are taken to speed up women's development or to enhance their position in decision-making. However, without the necessary push to strengthen the capacity of women and their mobility and development, their situation will remain as one still requiring affirmative action. When talking about persons with disabilities, the trend seems to be to consider them as one generic group, without consideration for gender or age. It is indeed true that just as women throughout the world have been disadvantaged in many ways, women with disabilities, and especially those with visual impairment, have a greater disadvantage in society. It used to be the case in our associations that leadership would be left to the men. When things began to change, the presidencies were left to the men. Today, we are proud that we have had two women presidents in the World Blind Union. This, however, must not be taken to be the end. We still have a majority of male leaders, and even many women will have more faith in men leaders, not because they have greater leadership capacity, but because they are men. There is still need to enhance the leadership capacity of visually impaired women and girls to build their self-confidence. The WBU, as the World Organization of the Blind, still has the important task of pressing for more support and education of girls and women with visual impairment to have more of the meaningful employment and decision-making positions. Another issue of concern is that in organizations worldwide, when the benchmarks have been reached in the most successful countries, the less successful will be forgotten. We must learn to consider where the country is coming from in trying to attain the set objectives. This is to say, for example, African countries cannot expect to reach the desired goals with as much ease as America or Western Europe. The unfortunate situation where women with visual impairment go out to beg with their children because they have no employment, or in richer nations where a large number of women with visual impairment survive on disability and welfare allowances, must be addressed. Governments and their aims to reach the SDGs, UN Sustainable Development Goals, must consider how to support girls with visual impairment to be properly educated. Governments must also ensure equality for women with visual impairment is a reality and not just talk. Number two, what are some of the challenges that women with visual disabilities encounter as they push for progress and transformation of women's lives, especially in developing countries? Women and girls with visual impairment in developing countries face many issues which must be dealt with from country to country. Some examples of these issues are forced marriages, or the opposite of that, being denied the opportunity to marry and have a family, because family members take it upon themselves to determine her life. Inability to escape female genital mutilation because those who decide to escape it are often excommunicated from their families. Being forced to be single mothers, often with men not of their own choosing choice, because family members think this is a sure way of ensuring that the visually impaired woman has a caretaker in old age. The list can be endless. Women's organizations and governments must now come forward and bring out the women with disabilities, including those with visual impairment, and set them on the path to realizing the fulfillment they worked hard to achieve over the decades. Number three, what is your personal reflection and experience on this year's Women's Day theme? We have spent more than five decades talking about women's rights and have made many important strides. We have, however, ignored the fact that as long as women with disabilities are not educated, children with disabilities are easily left out in education, they are denied family inheritance, and in cultures where infanticide is silently practiced, it is those with disability who are done away with. We need to pool our efforts together to strengthen the position of girls and women with disabilities, and we must remember to consider each disability separately because the needs of each disability are different. Four, are there any successes in pushing for progress and transformation in your many years of work for the blind and partially sighted? I must not seem to paint a bleak picture of the situation for girls and women with visual impairment. There are things which can be done to help them come to the same level with other women in society. This, however, will only be possible when women with disability are specifically targeted. In the 1990s, when the WBU Committee on the Status of Blind Women was established, it helped women with visual impairment in Africa to quickly come to the fore and participate actively in national organizations. In organizations where women are invisible, they quickly become visible when they are targeted. I therefore propose that programs be established to support girls with visual impairment in education, women with visual impairment in employment, and for those who may not be able to attain formal employment, programs to help them engage in self-employment and homemaking should be established. This is not a task or a problem for the WBU alone. It should concern governments, the UN, and the entire world. If we want to think of a better world, we must mitigate problems before they occur. We must also think of how to help those who are now suffering difficult living conditions because nothing was done when they were young, or perhaps because the wrong things were done for them. An example of wrong things being done is where people are kept in institutions without being taught any life skills and then being abandoned to fend for themselves at a later age. Such will very often end up with difficult life situations. It is necessary to push toward positive growth that will enable women with disabilities to be independent and lead successful lives. From LFLegal.com, Lainey Feingold provides her schedule and the topic of her talk at CSUN this week. Digital Accessibility, Legal Update, and more at CSUN 2018. Want to know what's happening in the digital accessibility legal space? I'm happy to let attendees of the 33rd Annual CSUN Assistive Technology Conference know that I will be offering the Digital Accessibility Legal Update three times at this year's conference. This will be one presentation repeated three times so that everyone who wants to attend can. I'm also excited to be co-presenting a fourth session, not the legal update, with Sue Boyd and an assistant general counsel in Microsoft's regulatory affairs group, who leads a legal and policy team focused on accessibility. Sue and I will be talking about best practices for staying ahead of the curve when it comes to accessibility. Important, only one of my CSUN sessions is included in the official schedule. Please share this post so everyone who wants to attend can. The schedule is posted with hot links on the LFLegal.com website. Schedule for the digital accessibility legal update at hashtag CSUNATC18. Schedule for the Beyond Compliance session with Microsoft. More about Lainey Feingold's CSUN sessions, legal update sessions, Beyond Compliance session with Microsoft's Sue Boyd, other law sessions at CSUN. Jump to a simplified summary of this document, a feature of LFLegal.com designed to meet WCAG success criteria 3.1.5, a WCAG 2.0 AAA reading level requirement. Schedule for the digital accessibility legal update at CSUN ATC 18. Repeating sessions of the 2018 CSUN Legal Update will be offered as follows. Wednesday, March 21st at 10 a.m. in Seaport Ballroom F, Deckway Suite, second floor Seaport Tower. Wednesday, March 21st at 2:20 p.m. in Seaport Ballroom A, Level Access Suite, second floor Seaport Tower. Thursday, March 22nd at 3:20 in Seaport Ballroom B, VFO Suite, second floor Seaport Tower. Schedule for the Beyond Compliance session with Microsoft. Thursday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. in Seaport Ballroom H, Microsoft Suite, second floor Seaport Tower. This new CSUN session, titled Beyond Compliance, Staying Out in Front of Digital Accessibility Legal Trends, will be a lively discussion with Microsoft lawyers Sue Boyd and Lainey Feingold about best practices that keep pace and outpace current legal developments in the accessibility space. More about Lainey Feingold's CSUN sessions, legal update sessions. The digital accessibility legal update offered annually by Lainey Feingold for the past many years is a lightning review of pretty much everything happening in the digital accessibility legal space. Regulations, administrative activity, structured negotiation and other settlements, and of course the explosion of lawsuits impacting accessibility. Does it matter that the Department of Justice killed the web regulations? What's happening in the courts? What about Department of Education, OCR, Office of Civil Rights activities? And most importantly, what best practices for digital accessibility can organizations in the public, private, and education sectors adopt to both limit legal risk and embrace the culture of accessibility? Accessibility is a civil right of disabled people. Come learn to think about the law as a motivator for good, not as a hammer of fear. Beyond Compliance's session with Microsoft's Sue Boyd. Microsoft is an international leader in accessibility, and I'm thrilled to be doing this session that will explore best practices to stay ahead of the legal curve. If you're not familiar with Microsoft's important work in the accessibility space, a good place to start is an article by Microsoft's Chief Accessibility Officer, Jenny LaFleury, titled Hitting Refresh on Accessibility. And to understand how Microsoft's accessibility commitment starts at the top, I also recommend CEO Satya Nadella's fascinating book, Hit Refresh, The Quest to Rediscover Microsoft's Soul and Imagine a Better Future for Everyone, available at bookstores online and on Bookshare, an accessible online library for people with print disabilities. Come share ideas on how to embed accessibility thinking in your organization's culture. The law can play a role, but it should not be a limiting one. Other law sessions at CSUN. The CSUN Assistive Technology Conference is the largest gathering of its kind and a not-to-be-missed experience for those interested in technology, digital access, and disability rights. Other sessions focusing on the legal side of things include the following. On Wednesday morning, Bank of America lawyer Erica Murphy will present Title III of the ADA and its applicability to financial institutions. Erica will be talking about the example of Bank of America's solution to assist visually impaired borrowers access to mortgage documents, something we work together on in structured negotiation. Bank of America has long been an accessibility leader. The company even brought a talking ATM to the CSUN conference in Los Angeles in 2002. There are other hot links and other itineraries for Lainey Feingold at her website. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradingservice.org. So long until next time.